Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.
David Sterrett is the editor-in-chief of the Quarterly Review of Film and Video, contributing writer at Cineast, film professor at the Maryland Institute College of Art, Robin Hood Radio's very own critic. He joins us weekly. The films are Kajillionaire, American Murder, The Family Next Door, and Native Son. Again, I don't know if you remember Mad Libs, but you could certainly write a book off these titles so easily. You know, I'd be on page 30 before I even came up for air.
I remember Mad Libs, and you're absolutely right. But in fact, what we have here are three movies, which this is another week where our theme is that these three movies have no theme in common. They are all completely different from each other, and each one in its own way is different from a lot of the other stuff around. So anyway, let's start off with Kajillionaire. Once again, I did it yesterday. I took my life into my hands and I went off to the movies, went off to a movie theater, saw a movie in a movie theater, and once again, as I have said before, don't try this at home. I'm a trained professional. It's dangerous these days, but it's not dangerous the way I do it. I drove out to a theater out in the suburbs, and I went to an afternoon show, and once again, I was the only person in the auditorium, so I could not have been more socially distanced, and everything worked out just fine. That's the kind of showings I like to go to anyway. As I understand it, in some places, if you go like to a really popular movie on a Saturday night, sure, there's going to be plenty of people. And I imagine in this pandemic time, it's dangerous, but not the way I do it, as I said. So anyway, I went off and I saw Kajillionaire because I was curious about it. And I'm glad I did, although I can't say it's a great movie. It's an interesting movie. Kajillionaire was written and directed by Miranda July, who is an artist who works in many fields. She's a performance artist and a this and a that, all kinds of things. And every once in a great while, she makes a feature film that gets shown in movie theaters. And now she's done it again with Kajillionaire. And this is a movie with it has a nice, interesting cast. I have to say that. It's about a family. And the members of the family are played by Deborah Winger is the mother, and Richard Jenkins is the father, and Evan Rachel Wood is the daughter. And they are basically a family of scam artists. What they do is they sort of wander about wondering how they're going to pay the rent and how they can get their hands on a few dollars. And apparently it never occurs to any of them to go out and maybe get a job or something like that. In a way, this is all kind of reminiscent of that extremely popular and extremely successful recent South Korean film called Parasite, which is also about a family of scam artists, although this movie goes in very, very different directions. So anyway, these three characters, the mom, the dad, and the 20-something daughter, this is what they do. And they come up with this great scheme at one point. Well, it's not a great scheme, but they think it's a great scheme, that they're going to take a flight. The movie is set mainly in Los Angeles. They're going to take a flight to New York and then fly back to Los Angeles and pretend that a piece of luggage has been lost. And that way they will get reimbursed by the insurance for the luggage and they will be able to pay another month's rent. So it's a cockamamie scheme and it doesn't work at all. Well, actually, it works a little bit. But along the way, they meet the movie's other main character, who is a young woman named Melanie, played by Gina Rodriguez, and she kind of joins them in their scamming activities, and the movie goes on from there. So that's what it's about. It has all kinds of very strange sorts of little plot quirks. For example, the family their apartment is in this windowless place right next to this ridiculous factory, where there's this foam, this pink foam is always dripping down the walls coming through from the factory next door. So they have to run back there from time to time and capture all of the foam in big sort of tubs so that it doesn't just drown the place out. But in order to get there, they have to sneak past the landlord to whom they owe rent. It's that sort of thing. So the movie I found, what Miranda July is sort of known for in her movies is this sort of quirkiness. And I have nothing against quirkiness, except that that's sort of maybe all this movie has to offer. It has, again, it has a good cast, a nice cast, an interesting cast. The story has all kinds of mildly interesting ideas in it. But I found there was no energy to it. That was the problem. I like movies that are, you know, sort of laid back and that don't jump up and hit us in the face or grab us by the lapels. That's all fine with me. But this movie, I just never felt that it had much going for it in the way. There was no dynamics to it. It was all sort of on the same even keel. The story and the characters, low-key, quirky. The filmmaking, very, very low-key, slightly quirky, but not very inventive. There's not much to look at in this movie, aside from the pink foam seeping in through the ceiling. There's not much to look at that's very interesting. So again, I found it sort of interesting in conception, but not very interesting in execution. I kept wishing for more, especially with a cast this interesting. Let them do something interesting. Let them say something interesting. And it just never got there. Mind you, there are some kind of bold scenes. There's a scene when they decide they're going to scam this guy who is literally dying. He's literally in his deathbed in his home. And there they are sitting there in the living room waiting for him to die in the other room. This is sort of bold, sort of strange, especially for a movie which is at its heart a comedy. So you know, I kind of respected Miranda July's courage in certain ways and the courage to make a movie like this with such a strange plot and such weird characters and such a, again, very, very kind of understated visual style. But it just never somehow quite clicked with me. So if you want to see something really different, really strange, really quirky, by all means, rush off to Kajillionaire. Certainly it's not about Kajillionaires, that's for sure. But if you want to see something with a little bit of real excitement to it, then I would say go seek elsewhere. Second movie I'd like to talk about this week, Jill, is a documentary, and oh, it is a very, very, very dark documentary. And it has gotten quite a lot of buzz as these things go. It is streaming, and you can very easily see it. And it's called American Murder, The Family Next Door, and it's one of these true crime documentaries. There are jillions of these out nowadays. True crime is a very thriving field, very thriving enterprise, and this movie is a slightly unusual offering, which is the reason why I wanted to get into it. Also the fact that it's got a lot of buzz and it's quite popular. Directed by Jenny Popplewell, and it's about a real case. Again, this is true crime, which took place just a couple of years ago when a woman and two of her daughters somehow weren't there one day, and the neighbors got concerned. They lived in Colorado. And one day, the neighbors realized, my goodness, we haven't seen the woman's name who disappeared was Shanann Watts. The neighbors said, "What? My gosh, we haven't seen her for a while. What happened to her? She's not answering the door. She's not following her usual routine. This is a very ordinary family. They do all the kinds of things that ordinary middle-class families do, and what's going on?" And so they call the police, and the police show up, and it's a little while before they can start investigating, and it turns out that, yeah, she's really vanished, along with two of the kids, little kids. So what is going on here? So, of course, very, very soon after, the husband becomes a possible suspect. Did the husband do something to these people? They seem to have a very happy marriage and a very happy household, but, and the movie goes on from there. I'm not going to give any spoilers. So what's unusual about American Murder, The Family Next Door, is that it is told entirely through social media, so that we don't have any talking heads on the screen, we don't have any analysis coming at us from narrators or anything like that. We just have a series of social media posts of all different kinds, video, audio, this and that, and the whole story is told in that way. Now, there have been movies that have been done this way in the past, and I don't think that American Murder is an especially brilliant example of the breed. And also the very fact that there are no talking heads, that there's no analysis coming at us through narrators or anything like that, in a way it gives the movie a certain kind of authenticity. All we're getting is stuff that was posted by various people, including the main victim of the whole thing, Shanann Watts. But it also means that nobody's trying to get below the surface. Nobody's trying to explore this. Nobody's trying to offer what might be explanations or psychological insights or sociological insights. So everything remains very much on the surface. That said, like many true crime documentaries, it's quite gripping and it's quite suspenseful, and you're never quite sure how the whole thing's going to turn out. And yes, by the end, you do have most of the answers to most of the things that seem like total mysteries at the beginning of the story. Again, the main claim to fame of this movie is that it tells everything through social media. It's sort of household horror delivered to us via social media. I don't find it a fully satisfactory film in that regard, but you know, it's interesting. It does have a certain kind of authenticity to it, and it reminds us, the very title reminds us, American Murder, the Family Next Door, that there's all kinds of things that go on in today's America, in today's middle-class America, in today's supposedly comfortable, well-off, psychologically adjusted middle-class America, which are absolutely horrific. And this movie opens up, if nothing else, reasons to think about that afresh. So it's a slightly offbeat documentary, a well-enough done documentary. I didn't find it all that enlightening, but if you're into true crime, it's one that's definitely worth checking out. Final movie I want to talk about today, Jill, is called Native Son. And this is a very, very unusual item. For one thing, it dates from 1951. It has been restored to something like very, very close to its original state, which is important because the movie suffered from an enormous amount of censorship when it first came out. So over the years, since it came out in 1951, there have been all kinds of, well, mainly there's been, let's just say, a heavily truncated version with all kinds of footage simply chopped out of it that's been circulating and that people have been able to see. So now the movie has been restored to its original state. It's around an hour and 45 minutes long, but that's maybe about 20 or 30 minutes longer than it's been for many years now. And the reason that it was censored is it was considered hugely controversial in 1951. And I think that you could reasonably consider it controversial now. It's based on the classic American novel, which I have certainly read, I hope everybody has read it, written by Richard Wright, published in 1940, called Native Son. Richard Wright was an African-American novelist, and he was living in France, and he published this novel, which is about a young black man who takes a job as chauffeur to a white family and is sort of manipulated by some people in and close to the family so that he finds himself in situations where a young black man should not be. For example, the daughter of the family, the very young, attractive daughter, befriends him, and this immediately pushes buttons in everybody, all the white people around. And he, the young man's name is Bigger Thomas. He himself is hugely uncomfortable about this. Why is she being like this? Why is she? She's putting me in these uncomfortable situations. Everybody's looking at us, but she does. And she has a couple of friends who do the same sort of thing. And the next thing you know, he's in way over his head in these very, not just embarrassing, but untenable situations for Chicago in the 1940s, 1950s. Well, let's just say a crime takes place, a tragedy takes place, maybe I should call it that, and Bigger is right in the middle of this tragedy. And all kinds of horrible things ensue from there. This poor young man, through no fault of his own, becomes involved in a tragedy where he himself is at the center of the tragedy, and all eyes and fingers are pointed at him, and the story wends its way to, well, I won't say what the conclusion is. So again, this novel was very controversial and popular when it came out in the very early 1940s, and the movie was made in 1951, and the movie has a very unusual history. It was directed by a man named Pierre Chanel, who was a Belgian director, and he had been forced out of his native land when the Nazis occupied France in the 1930s, and so or 40s, and so he was living in Argentina, and that's where the movie got made. So we have here a movie made by a Belgian director in Argentina, which is where they could get put the thing together. And what's even more interesting than that is that a very, very important black actor of the day, Canada Lee, was going to play Bigger Thomas, but then it turned out that he was unavailable, and so Richard Wright himself, the author of the novel, was recruited to play Bigger Thomas. So it's just fascinating to see the author of this hugely important American novel starring in the movie of that novel, which was made in Argentina by a Belgian director living in exile. Unfortunately, Richard Wright is 20 years older, was when he starred in the movie, 20 years older than the character. So they're always decking him out in sweatshirts and baseball caps. traps and stuff like that, and it's not very convincing. He, unfortunately, is the weakest link in the movie, but it's still quite a fascinating film. It's being pitched very much now, and again, it is streaming. It's easy to find on the internet now, this new restored version of Native Son. It's been restored, and it looks good, and it moves along in a very satisfactory way. Again, Richard Wright's own performance is the thing that's the weakest link, but it's quite fascinating. And again, all the stuff that was censored out of it in the 1950s, largely because a lot of it's very offensive racial stuff aimed at the main character, has now been all restored. So the movie there, in all of its kind of very flawed racism is depicted, not manifested by the film. It is just all there for us to see. So again, it's a fascinating example of something that a very troubled production, but it got made. It's being pitched very much as a film noir. It's sort of a film noir, but mainly it's a fascinating example of what racially oriented cinema looked like in the 1950s, and it's really interesting to play it off again against the kind of thing that people like Spike Lee are doing nowadays. So I really, really recommend seeking out this 1951 version of Native Son. It's a fascinating artifact. So that is my very diversified story this week, Jill.
For which we thank you, as always, David Sterrett, Films in Focus, the films Cajillionaire, American Murder, The Family Next Door, and Native Son.